shorts and bag.
That's a nasty looking finger, lady.
You got the bait?
What? No.
Hey, I got your fertilizer.
We made you.
Welcome back, interweb friends. This is Stop the Movie. I want to get out. Hollywood makes bad movies. We make fun of them. I'm Alex Dunbar. I'm joined this week by Cody Wolf.
Hello.
There's really no catchphrases in this movie. I know. There's nothing. There's nothing to work with. Jack Estabrook.
I know you all want answers. I want answers too.
That might be the closest. And special guest returning, always a favorite, Tim Ferlito is here.
It's been
a
while. Very happy to be here.
It has been a while. Yeah, Tim's episodes are always some of the.
The cruelest.
Oh, cruelest? Well, sometimes the movies are the cruelest. Yeah, you did get the coveted Tiptoes slot, though, which will always be one of my favorites.
Damn.
Yeah. Our movie this week is the 2014 Nicolas Cage Left Behind movie.
Yes.
And as I warned these guys, we're going to do a quick disclaimer. We are going to make fun of this movie. We are not making fun of anyone's religion in this
movie.
Not
to say that the movie isn't making fun of your religion.
Yes. Right. Yes. No, not to say the movie is absolutely mocking some religions.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not judging anyone's religion. I do feel okay judging how this movie was made.
Yes.
And that's so just, you know, beforehand. The movie is based on a series of books that I think Kirk Cameron was previously in.
They did a TV series or TV movies.
Straight to DVD releases. And actually, just so you know, I finished watching the Nick Cage version last night. Today on Netflix, I streamed the original Kirk Cameron.
Oh, really?
And actually, interesting, like the whole Nick Cage movie is only about 15 minutes of the Kirk Cameron version.
Interesting.
Everything that happens on the plane is like right up at the very beginning, very front. Everything after that is like all this like breathless, paranoid amalgam of like UN conspiracy and like all this other stuff that's supposed to like, you know, like everything that came together to bring together the end of the world.
I see.
I thought
where they ended it, and that's really fast forwarding it, but where they ended it looked like they were leaving it open for a sequel. Like this
I
is what happens
they are.
Next.
You know they were hopeful.
I know.
Yeah. Well, it's a series of novels, sort of like
Atlas Shrugged Part 1. Yes. Like, of course they're going to scream and clamor for 2 and 3.
What I was expecting and hoping for was they did the Twilight Zone series in the 2000s.
Yes.
Yeah. One of my favorite episode of it was actually basically this movie, and it had Jake Busey in it, actually, where people just start disappearing, and it's like this paranoid thing, and they're trying to figure out what's going on. Is it aliens or this? And at the end of the episode, you find out it's... people are being ascended to heaven. There's the rapture or whatever.
That was a Twilight Zone episode?
Yeah, in the early 2000s. And it was like actually really interesting and good. And this, I thought they were going to do something like that with this, but this is just like, no.
You thought wrong.
Right. Not at all.
It's Nicolas Cage needs to land a plane.
Yeah.
And his daughter runs around aimlessly. And that's the movie plot.
With the most
aimlessly, but so purposefully.
Yes,
well,
of course.
Most of the movie, like Jack and I watched it together, and most of the movie was just me going, where is she going now, and why? Like, why is she breaking that window? Where is she heading? Where does she think this kid is?
She was holding on.
Why is she
holding on to her little brother,
car?
And he disappeared. Where would he be?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it was in a moment it happened, so she's going to what, the hospital?
Well, we'll get to that moment.
We're going to get to it. I'm fast-forwarding.
All right, so the movie starts at an airport, and it doesn't just start at the airport. It loves this airport. I mean, they really got
this
their
location.
They got their money out of this location.
Absolutely.
And it's so Chloe is getting off a plane. We get to see Leah Thompson, which was really
nice reminder. Yeah. Leah Thompson's still out there, still good looking, still viable.
Yeah, looking great.
I was hoping they were going to do more with her.
I thought that she would.
Well,
be in the film later.
There's a scene later on in the film that I thought would have really, really worked. And I don't know if you want to wait till we get to it.
No, let's wait till we get to it right now.
I'll wait till we get to it.
Yeah. So Chloe's getting off a plane. She's coming home for her dad, Nicolas Cage's birthday.
Nicolas Cage is a pilot.
And her mom's like, hey, sorry, he got called into work. And that as a pilot, and she's like, well, actually, it's not even clear at this point he's a pilot. She's like, what plane is he on?
It really took a while for you to realize who is what.
In fact, I only learned what Chad Michael Murray's character's profession was until very late.
But he's not until that one horribly telegraphed line.
I was like, I thought he was joking prior to that, and then I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, because people were recognizing him in the airport. I was like, is this guy an actor?
Yeah, that's the first thing you think. Like, you know, like people are walking up to him, like, you know, he's giving autographs left and right in this very desolate airport.
I'm like, who are they walking? And I thought he was like a war hero, because people kept saying something about seeing him
in war zones,
zones and stuff. So I'm like, I guess he's like, I don't like a soldier who's getting a lot of publicity or something. That's what I
like rescued my
mind. I had that thought as well. At first, I thought just actor, because like that's the first thing you think of when the autographs are being given out. And then I heard that the same thing you're talking about. That's exactly what I thought it was. And then all of a sudden, that weird lady comes up.
Who
just starts yelling at him for and like.
Chad Michael Murray's going through, and this lady just starts like kind of going off on him, like, and first of all, we don't know who this character is, but there's a woman in the airport, so all we know is she seems to be famous.
Mm-hmm.
She knows who he is, and she is kind of going off on him with a very Christian message. And he's
criticizing him.
Why are there all these wars in the world? Like, he started them.
Yeah. Very accusatory.
Well, I thought maybe it was one of those like paranoid, like, you're not telling the truth. Why aren't you reporting on that? The lawlessness of man, the immorality is what's bringing these things about. And he's like, look, lady, natural disasters are natural disasters. And I cover natural disasters. We later learn he's a journalist, but, sorry, I spoiled that.
That actually is a spoiler.
Even for the viewers, you're like, she's like, well, why don't you tell the truth? Why don't you? This is kind of what I thought was going on, and of course, I didn't know that at the time. But later on, they establish, oh, you're that hot shot. You know, he's supposed to be like a backpack journalist for like CNN or whatever. Mm-hmm.
And I guess
goes around with like low grade, GNN, so they don't get sued. Yeah. So he goes around to these like war zones and places like the tsunami and then
that's just right, because me just working in news, my only thought was they wouldn't let a guy with a beard like that on the
Because that's where I'm like, I thought he was like special forces. Yeah, I mean, as someone who works as a TV reporter, there's nothing about this guy that says TV reporter to me.
Have you guys ever recognized him in anything else before? I mean, like,
I kept,
is he Jan Michael Vincent's kid or something?
He looks familiar. I've seen
the name. I recognize.
He's from a show. Oh God, I can't remember what it is. It was a long.
But I'm not saying like he's supposed to be like this like really recognized like world famous reporter. He's like 28.
Yeah,
he's really young right out of a I can't model for Gap anymore.
Well, and let's be honest, like no reporters. Again, I work as a reporter. No reporter is that famous. I mean, there is no correspondent.
Like you'd have to be like a David Muir or a John Stewart.
Anchor.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, like a main anchor maybe, but like I could list off a bunch of national TV correspondents to you, but like nobody, any of them could. Walk down the middle.
I thought he was like the local reporter.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just like there's nothing about him that screamed like, you know, internationally renowned.
Yeah,
I thought he was like the local
guy. He was too young, you know.
Exactly, he's so young, and everybody's like, and like Nick Cage, he's like, you know, hey, the
Nick
guy
Cage
from
is,
the news.
Nick Cage is all about that.
I thought like everyone knows him. Yeah, if only TV reporters were this well known.
That's right.
I would love to be in that world. And we now get the strangest meet cute of any movie we've ever seen. God. Where Chloe comes in and is like, starts going off on the Christian woman, like refuting her and being like,
like
nothing,
science
you
causes
know.
These things.
Science
How
causes
can you be so blind
things,
and you
yeah,
believe that God
like,
does everything? And why
get away
God,
from your Bible, basically.
Why doesn't God help these people in terrible situations? And
yeah.
All
yeah.
in all, good points.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's kind of interesting, and like the look on Chad Michael Murray's face during this probably is what someone who would be stuck in that situation is like. It's just very confused to me. Like, why am I in the middle of this?
It's like is this a flash mob? What the hell is happening to me?
Like, this is not about me. I don't, like, okay, I'm just gonna go away.
Because I was waiting for that crazy Christian lady to like show up later, like she didn't make the cut.
Yeah. I kind of thought she. No. I did think
I was
she was
waiting
gonna show
for
up
that.
Later. Yeah, that surprised me that we never kind of heard from her again.
Yeah,
that, especially because they work so hard to establish her early on.
Well, they do. Movie, well, they do this with other characters. Like they always do, like these crazy close-ups of all these people. And I said it out loud. I was like, okay, these are the people who are going to be on this airplane later on in the movie. So we have to know who each one of them are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we can establish who they are later on. Like because the first, easily the first 15 minutes of this movie, and this just made me laugh my ass off, is they go and they have a coffee at like the. The little cafe set up, the Green Mountain Cafe
set up. Let me set this up a little bit, Jack. Okay, so before we get to that, so Chloe is there to see her dad, and she meets Chad Michael Murray, but she's waiting to catch her dad, Nick Cage, who has taken off his wedding ring, left it in the car, and is getting on to
while this weird, happy saxophone music is playing, like a Hallmark movie.
It was awful.
The music in this movie.
Music from this movie was like it was almost lifted entirely.
It's all stock music.
Like they found someone like you know from 1988 and said, "Hey, I loved the music in the movie Roxanne."
Yes.
Steve Martin.
Yes.
Can you make like you know a license free version of that? And then it sat around and someone found it.
I'm gonna tell you right now, Cody can confirm this because we watched the film together. Every time there's a music cue change, I laugh my ass off so hard I couldn't breathe.
Yeah,
because it was just so random. Like the direction would change and it never quite fit.
Nope.
And I have never made such a strong comment about movie score before.
It's like how you see music used in like really low, but like a Birdemic or something. Where stock music then like dissolves into other stock music as the scene changes. It's like really poorly done.
Well,
that was one thing that really stuck out. While
in
I was
like a really low budget movie, you can't orchestrate some of the tonal shifts you need to do and really time that and pace that because you just
that
have a preset piece of music. But like this was like a $16 million movie. They absolutely could have had someone score this movie.
What was that the budget I was wondering? I didn't get the chance to look it up.
It wasn't high, but it's not horrible.
It's not that low. Yeah. So
Jack and I looked up because the plane CG, like towards the end, we're like, how much does this movie cost? Because
It looked a little rough. It looked better than a sci-fi movie, but like worse than like a higher end movie.
It was very inconsistent too. Like some shots looked fully rendered, and then there's a shot late in the movie that looked barely rendered.
Really? Seriously? That was first pass.
Yeah,
it was.
I mean, like food fight territory almost. It was. Yeah.
So now we're
not even coffee yet. Yeah. We got to get moving on this.
So she's sitting in a Green Mountain Coffee,
and three scenes
to
take
wait
place
for her
here.
Dad. Three straight scenes happen at different tables at this Green Mountain Coffee.
Now is this Green Mountain's second appearance? Wasn't a Green Mountain the coffee he's drinking in Paranoia?
Oh, I think
like
you're
when
right.
He's trying to get the one
he's tied to him.
I don't know.
This is how they're really making bad choices in the movies they're doing product
I feel bad for Green Mountain Coffee. It's like, you know, all right, they're going to pay all this money to like you know be in the film, but they didn't obviously get the choice of what scene they're going to be in.
Sure,
you know, like marital infidelity and you know familial discord brought to you by Green Mountain Coffee.
Slurp, slurp.
Yeah.
So basically she meets the reporter, right?
Yeah.
And
they
he
sit down
leaves...
And...
Well, he kind of comes.
He hangs around until Nick shows up.
Yeah.
He comes up with the admittedly extremely hot stewardess.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Some Australian chick. I don't know if you guys watched any of the extras.
I didn't.
I'm that devoted. So she comes up. They leave. He takes her hat from her and sees his daughter.
And he's now Nick
kind of like hiding his hands
so
she doesn't see the ring.
According to Leah Thompson, Nick Cage knows that his daughter had flown in to see him.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Nick Cage seems to be mystified by the script like all of us are because he's sort of surprised to see his daughter.
Like, doesn't he even say like I wish you had told me you were coming so I could, or something like that or like you, I wish you had known I had known you were coming or something like that.
It's something like that. Like, he has a weird line where you're like, wait, does he know? Like,
I still
like
don't know.
He basically Nick Cage, the actor, was like, I think we've got a plot hole here and I don't know how to play it.
Just barrel through, Nick. Barrel through.
Yep. I'm gonna go right down the middle, so I'm not committing to either edge of what this could be in. And
so
it's obviously some
Nick
tension
Cage,
here.
Nick Cage sits down with his daughter. The reporter leaves, and they have a conversation.
Kind of, he sort of leaves.
Yeah, he must be like lingering in the background,
lingers, just off screen. Yeah.
Sort of like you know, like pouring more like you know, Splenda into his coffee, and just kind of like
the flight
halfway in and out of frame.
But they have a conversation, and basically it's like, oh, you're never there for me, whatever. And he's like, she's like, where's your wedding ring? And he's like, oh, it's in my car. I never take it when I fly, and stuff like that.
But the whole thing is like this. It's the whole thing is like they're talking about this. Infidelity that she knows he's engaging in.
Right.
It doesn't really have any proof, but it's kind of an open secret. But they both blame the mother. They both blame Leah Thompson.
We can all agree on
like,
one thing.
It's like she's upset with him for the fact that he's doing it,
But hey, I get it, you know?
And the rationale is funny. They're both like, look, we can all agree on one thing. This is Leah Thompson's fault, and we can all agree it's because she's super Jesus-y now. We yep. all, that's why this is all going on.
Yep. And when later on you see her house, I mean, it's clear. It's like every frame, there's like a cross or a painting yeah. of the Virgin Mary. Jack
like, this
or,
is a creepy house.
It was a little creepy. It was creepy. Like it was a little, it was, yeah, it was a little overly religious. Like, I can understand yeah. if it was like a little bit, like she had like a prayer rosary and a Bible and maybe one painting of Jesus in the dining room.
You know, the whole house is like a Christian coffee cafe.
Yeah. Yeah. And at this point, and later on in the movie, I was like, boy, for a movie that I thought is supposed to be very pro-Christianity, like, this is pretty harsh on Christianity. Yeah. Like, this is like a hatchet job, like, early on. And then I was like, oh, okay.
Actually, you're kind of right. I never really thought about that, but, like, they really don't present Christianity as very flattering up front.
No, it's like a drag. Like it's like, oh, God, your mom, the wet blanket since she got into Jesus, you know? Like, yeah. Like, oh, okay, all right.
So yeah, they have this conversation, and then he's like, "Oh, I gotta go. I gotta plane to fly." So he gets up and leaves, what's his name is sitting directly behind her. He like took a seat behind her at the table.
And then she gets up from one table and moves to his table, and we're in scene three.
Another scene.
I have a note in my sheet. So far, 85% of this movie is people at a Green Mountain Cafe.
Well, my favorite thing too is that. And the way they get her to go to his table is like they have this awkward scene where they're talking and then like people like walk in between them like a family.
Oh yes.
And
yes.
they're like, oh,
that's thinking, one thing I
that's
cannot
a cue. They'll be on the plane
in low budget films like when they can't like you know when they can't afford to do like more shots like you know more cover shots or different angles whatever like that is like is just the horribly staged. We're a crowd.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like. You just hear people going, cue.
Yeah.
Go, go.
Yeah. Yeah.
So she's like, oh, this is awkward. So she gets sits at his table for your next scene, which is them talking again.
And them talking and just sort of this, like, I don't know, like, sort of meet cutie, like, oh, this like guy I just met, and here's all the problems of my family. And, you know, I don't know why I'm telling you this, but I do have this script in front of me. So, I, you know,
it demands it.
Yeah.
By the way, quick thing.
Here's your green coffee.
In the extras. The actress that plays Chloe, that scene that they shot, that was the first scene in the Green Mountain Coffee.
Oh, okay.
That was the first
day.
Day
one. And the second and the
she
third.
Was hired 2 days before that scene. She was hired 2 days
My
before principal
God.
Photography.
That's
wow, did
nuts.
They lose somebody else?
I don't know. I don't know.
I think I read on Wikipedia they lost somebody else, and I can't remember who it was, but my God, 2 days?
2 days.
And why? You wouldn't even shift your schedule to get like one like, of her so, like,
some of the plane scenes where she's not in?
Or even have her do just some of the walking. Or, I mean, she spends 50 minutes of this movie just walking around. You wouldn't do some of that stuff first rather than the dialogue.
She prefers a challenge.
I have a feeling Nick Cage gave him 2 weeks.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to shoot this thing here and here, and then we're going to be in the plane, and then I'm done.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so.
So everything was working around
actually, that's
him.
True. We only ever see Nick Cage in an airport.
In the plane.
In the plane.
And then at the end,
when the scene
on
the ground
landed,
outside the plane. He's only in three locations.
He's only, the parking garage
and
the airport.
And that's pretty quick to shoot. You could probably do that in about 3 weeks.
I mean,
it's an easy location.
Yeah.
How many false airplanes?
Like Nick Cage, absolutely.
Low budget.
Yeah, because
I mean, his stuff was just lines. There wasn't like action stuff or anything that would have taken too long to shoot.
There was some special effects stuff, but that didn't really involve him. They could that stuff's all added later.
They were effects. I don't know how special they were.
They were special.
Average.
Effects.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're short bus effects.
So, what's his name? Brock, whatever. I can't remember his name.
Brock Williams.
Buck Williams.
That's
right. So, Buck.
Who's name? Yeah. Buck.
That's how you could tell how crappily, like, even just from the beginning, just from writing it, like, when those different kinds of, like, Lifetime movie soap opera names come forth.
Because her name, I have a note here, her name is Chloe Steele.
Yeah.
Like,
Rayford Steele. That's Nick Cage's name. Rayford. Steel. Do you know what? Before we're going to jump ahead to a character, because it's apropos right now, the character that Jordan Sparks plays, the black woman in First Class of the plane, do you know what her character's name
is? She is pretty high billing, too.
What's that?
Shasta Carvel.
Oh, my God.
Shasta Carvel.
Yes, you're my hero.
Drink no one likes, an ice cream place no one goes to.
This, oh my god,
that's brilliant.
That is terrible.
I didn't catch that.
I mean, like, you really gotta wonder, like, is this like an amazing, like, subversive exercised by a guy who's no longer enamored with Christianity and like hates all the old Christian movies that he's did. Like he just starts to subvert it by like making everything intentionally horrible, but like in a way people can't catch.
Can you imagine if you're Jordan Sparks and you're like, your character's name is Shasta Carver and be like, okay.
She signed the contract.
You know, she's got to keep telling people, like, I just did a movie with Nicolas Cage. Oh, really? Who do you play? Oh, I played this woman in First Class.
I guarantee your first question must have been like, does anyone say my first and last name at any point in the movie? No. Okay, I'm in then. Like,
thank God this was an 88 minutes where they say the first.
I was going to say, this is like an 88 minutes style names. The guy who did the names for 88 minutes did this.
So
Guy Lafarge is the co-pilot.
So Buck gets up and he's getting on Nicolas Cage's plane. And someone explained to me the U2 ticket thing. I don't understand.
See, I don't understand. Now, this is confusing. There are two sets of tickets.
Some guy drives up.
Okay, a guy.
Because one guy gives U2 tickets to Chloe, but then Nicolas Cage has tickets too.
He said, give them to your dad. And then gave them to Buck Williams, who then, like, flies so much that he's able to go into the cockpit and just hand tickets to people.
Hey, pilot.
Okay. I missed that. Like, I was just
how was Nick Cage going to get these tickets if his daughter hadn't have been standing outside the plane?
That's a good point.
I don't know.
Well, yeah, the guy just pulls up on his little car. He's like, hey, this is your dad.
Hey, give these tickets to your dad.
Hey, Chloe, how you doing?
They're
I don't understand why they, like,
too.
Specifically called out U2. Like, I know. They could be just like, I have these tickets your dad wanted. He's like, I got the U2 tickets. It took me 2 weeks to get them.
No, but the whole reason for that scene to exist was to know that his going to London was pre-planned. He was trying to say, I'm missing your son's party because I just got called in. When like the guy comes up, took me 2 weeks to get these tickets.
It sets up that he's a sleaze and he's planned this rendezvous with a stewardess, and that's why
Only reason
he doesn't get sucked up in
which the whole thing actually makes me wonder later on, did you two make it in the rapture?
I know. That's a good question.
I wonder.
Order to accomplish that plot point, they had to have a porter show up, give the tickets to Chloe, who gives the tickets to Buck, who then goes into a cockpit to give them to Nick Cage in order to accomplish a pretty clumsy plot point.
You save on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, that's right.
Who was disappointed by
but you would think that she would figure it. Now, that's the scene where she figures it out. That son of a bitch, he's going on a rendezvous with that girl. Wouldn't she just tear up the tickets?
She knows how much they cost. It's U2.
She's like, hey, it's U2.
She's mad. You know. She's not a jerk.
Look, it's U2. You know,
I guess she's going to throw that in his face when he gets back.
So now...
How'd you like the concert, Dad? Well, what concert was that?
So now Buck gets on the plane where seemingly 50% of the seats in the plane are occupied by kids.
Yeah.
There's a lot of kids on this plane.
Yeah,
and a little person with a chip on his shoulder.
That was the most annoying character. And, does this guy go through life getting offended by everything everybody says? Because everybody says to him in this scene in this movie, he's like, oh, is that a short joke?
He's got, maybe that's his flaw is he doesn't, I don't know.
No, his flaw is he's a gambler, remember?
Oh, that's right, he's a gambler.
Because everyone has a flaw,
really say anybody's flaws, it's just like,
everyone's supposed to have one.
That's what I was waiting for, too, was some sort of scene where everyone's like,
because Nicolas Cage,
I regret doing this or this, that's why...
We'll get into that later. Remind me to bring that up later. But go ahead.
I'm not going to knock anyone's religion, but it's clear. Is it clear that the Muslim guy isn't going to the rapture because he's a Muslim?
Well, we have to talk about that.
I think so, because he's the nicest, most decent man in First Class.
And they even make some commentary about how everyone thinks he's a terrorist. And he's like, come on, I'm not a terrorist. What the hell? I get that all the time. And it's like, so this guy is basically not, is he not in the rapture just because he's not a Christian?
That's what I was waiting for some reveal.
Well, we're getting ahead of
it.
We're getting ahead. Yeah. All right, so and at the same time, Chloe is also now back home with Leah Thompson.
She has some time to visit her home, and she's got a son, a little brother who's so young that he's kind of, he's kind of like a son to her almost.
He's like 11 or 12, they don't say anything overt, but he's got to have some sort of horrible illness.
Because
he's pale, he has like almost no hair, enormous glasses.
And he's skinny as a rail.
And he can't leave anywhere without his special backpack.
I noticed that too. Why is that not established better? Because it's clearly a thing.
Yeah, like, grab your dialysis, Johnny. I mean,
I don't know. He has, by the way, my favorite line in the movie, which is when Chloe comes home and she gives him there's like a baseball glove for him in his bag.
Oh, yeah.
And the kid's like, hey, it's a brand new baseball glove.
Beat.
that I've been asking for.
I have that line written down right here.
It was so like, it was like a comical pause. Like someone's like, second half of the line. Deliver the second half of the line.
Oh my God. The brand new baseball glove I have been asking for.
Because
kids love grammar.
Yeah, very conversational. Just a naturalistic way of saying that.
Well, they probably just grabbed some cute kid off the lot. You're obnoxious enough. You can be this little kid. What? Skippy Jones, the young sidekick to our main character. Or whatever,
and
I don't know what his name is.
And then we also okay. We're seeing.
She talks to her mother.
His name is like Rami or something.
It's
like
Ray,
that.
I think.
Rami.
Yep.
Rami.
Because she keeps yelling his name for like 20 minutes of this movie.
That's right.
So so basically, she gets in an argument with Leah Thompson. Your religion pushes us away.
And it never really was established what turned Leah Thompson to God. Now, when I watched the Kirk Cameron version today, it had to do with it when Leah's mother passed away. Uh-huh. That's when she took solace in the Lord and she started going to prayer meetings and meeting all these different people.
I would have loved to have known that.
But there was nothing. It's like you have no idea. It's like they make it sound like this was a really sudden thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but they give absolutely no background. And like Leah Thompson, it's really sad. She's just really, you know, I think she's a wonderful lady. She's a nice actress.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Looms large in people of our generation in terms of, you know, culture and whatnot. But given nothing, absolutely nothing, she's the only reason she's there is to be this shining beacon of misunderstood goodness. Yeah. And nothing at all as a character. Like, how does she feel about her husband obviously straying emotionally? How does she feel about her daughter getting angry with her, other than that she's concerned for her soul?
Her son, who may or may not be suffering from a critical illness.
When the movie portrays Leah Thompson's turning to religion as a crucial event in all of these characters' turning point, but we have no idea what it was. Like, it was just like, invent your own scenario.
How long it's been, or like, you know, what she was like before. Nothing at all.
I mean,
just really horrible, just a disservice to basic storytelling.
Well, it's like they wasted the entire film on the airplane landing sequence. Like you said, apparently the Kirk Cameron one that was only touched on briefly.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming
it's hardly anything.
You got more story development in that one then?
Yeah, as far as like everything else, it's like some of the things that happen later on sort of like, you know, harken back to, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
So now we've got, you know, and as Tim said, Jordan Sparks is on the plane with a little girl. And a
married couple that we assume they're married. They have Alzheimer's. They might have just bumped into one another.
I don't know.
The most Alzheimer's ridden duo I've ever seen in my life. But apparently, this one lovable lady, not good enough for God. I don't know what her husband did.
I felt so bad for the whole movie.
He's the most cantankerous bastard on the plane. He makes it.
I felt so bad for the whole movie. I was like, why is she? Why was she left behind?
Really?
How did they even get on a plane? Like, I mean,
how did they buy a ticket?
This is so. It's not even cliched. Like a cartoony portrayal of like a
Mr. Magoo version of Alzheimer's.
Yes. That's exactly. Yes. It's ridiculous. And then I have in my notes, I'm like, where is this movie going? We are 30 minutes in and essentially nothing has happened. All we have accomplished in 30 minutes is seeing some people get on a plane and
Nicolas Cage's
and that there is strife at Nicolas, you know, Cage's home.
Yeah.
We have accomplished nothing.
Nothing whatsoever. Minutes. Stuff that could have been handled.
Yeah.
In 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It was appropriately
done.
There's
a lot of time.
And by the way,
you
can do this amazing
flashbacks too.
Yeah. Just to go back really quick to the discussion between Leah Thompson and the daughter there. So they're having it out like out on the Three Seasons porch or whatever like that. And the kid, Rami, is off in the background. He's like in the doorway kind of hiding, listening to it. And did you guys see that like he got this look of satisfaction on his face that someone was finally telling his mother off?
Yes.
Did anyone else see that he was like digging this argument?
Because he seems to be into it too. At some point he's like, Dad said someone's washing Mom's brain. And like, you know, and Chloe's like, oh, I don't know if that's true. Like, even Chloe's like, I don't know if that's true. That's a joke. And, you know, he's like, I don't get it. And I'm like, none of us do, kid. It's none of us do. None of us are on board. So she takes Raimi.
She decides,
Chloe takes to
I'm,
take
I'm
him
getting
to the
out
mall.
Of here, and he says, no, I haven't seen you in so long, Chloe. Can I come with you? And she says, all right, fine. So they decide to go to the mall and awkwardly clap along to a breakdancing competition.
Seriously.
Surprisingly
like
lengthy.
Like 30 years too late.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're all clapping off sync. Like
and
they're
they, I'm like, they're wearing acid-washed jeans. Yeah. Yeah. And like the bandana do-rag
It's like a don't do drugs assembly
oh my
in high
God,
school.
Seriously. Like you know, like posters for like the nicotine mash behind him and shit.
Yeah, yeah. There's a Starbucks. I feel like they put the money out for this scene, the
biggest Starbucks in the world.
Yeah,
right behind.
So
them.
these producers
because they
coffee.
Heard that Green Mountain was on board and they're like, screw them.
Yeah. Yep.
I feel this like the poor movie. Kids who had to do the breakdancing had to be like. Guys, this isn't what we can do what you're asking us to do. It is not current. I mean, we can do it, but you really might want to have us do something a little more modern.
This really is a there's so much in this movie that is sort of like a conservative Christian's idea of what culture other than their own is like.
Yes. Yeah.
This is what they think it is like at a big city mall. Because this is supposed to be in
New
the
York.
New York City, Long Island area. So this is supposed to be a big, like, so this is what, like, someone from, like, you know, from, like, Lawrence, Kansas thinks, like, a mall is, like, it's urban, which means there's hip-hop in the aisles.
Yeah.
And there's just, like, mayhem everywhere.
Yeah. Lots of lights
maybe
and
they
crazy
saw,
colors. And
maybe they saw Battle of the Year and thought it was going to be big again.
I know. the team reformed.
Yeah. But again, the thing about the mall, there's a similar thing about the airport, which is that you could tell that they got a portion of it closed off, but they only had so much money for extras, for so many extras.
Yeah.
It's like there's this huge area that's cut off, and there's only so many people to fill it. It's
people.
Like the emptiest mall in the world. Like these hip hop guys would have like even been upset, like, wow, even in this day and age, we can't get people to show up. There's nobody here.
Yeah.
I mean, like, and the same thing at the airport.
Somewhere Josh Holloway is down in a court of Jack Daniels, like, guys, where am I live going to? I thought Big Boy was going to be big.
Sorry. Franklin with a Y hadn't taken over yet. And then Chloe loses Raimi, but he's off looking at a drone helicopter, which is a surprisingly modern reference.
Yeah,
it is.
And I'm like, okay, so
we're in a world. It almost cuts her head off. Doesn't the guy like buzz her with it? And she just goes, ah, ha, 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 and then they walk away.
Yeah.
Like, sort of seriously,
like,
it's like
something like, you know, sprang out at like, you know, at the Halloween house.
Yeah.
As opposed to something that could have like lacerated her face on him.
Exactly.
So she says something to the kid and she like hugs him.
Like, don't worry about mom and dad. We'll work it out. And then he says, something. I love you, Chloe. And then vanishes.
Yeah.
Yep. They're hugging each other. And then just like a quick flash because they had to cover it somehow.
Yep.
Just two frames of white. And then all of a sudden, she's just holding a big empty
pile
sack
of clothes.
And
they fall down.
And everyone starts freaking out because
she's
people
bugging
have
out.
Disappeared.
Oh, and by the way, did anyone else catch that one crappy line that Raimi had? Like when they hop in the car, they want to go to the mall. He says, I hear there's an 80% off sale at the GameStop. There's no 80% off sale at GameStop. Any GameStop, anywhere, ever.
I don't think
ever.
I don't think there's an 80%.
There's an 80% off sale.
I did not catch that.
That was when he was in the car. And like it was kind of muted. Like if the car was pulling away.
I don't think there's an 80% sale off anywhere. That's
I'm gonna
not
get
closing.
Five Xboxes.
80% off.
At GameStop.
I'm going to get 12 Nintendo DSs right now.
Jeez Louise.
Whole store, 80% off. Wow.
Skyrim for $4?
Yeah.
So at the same time on the plane, the little girl disappears.
I think, or maybe is it before this? I wanted to ask a weird question. Maybe
I like,
too,
how this girl mentioned that her father was, like, the starting quarterback for the New York Jets, too, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
That was like, a weird thing.
Which is a weird thing.
Yeah.
So, when they're on the plane, Nick Cage shows the blonde flight attendant that he has the U2 tickets.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a moment where he looks
he
at
looked
the
disappointed.
Envelope.
Yeah, I couldn't
not the
figure
tickets,
it out.
Or freaked out.
And he's like super weird and she's
this
even
is where
like,
I was confused and I thought there were two sets of tickets.
That was
somehow,
I, no, that
this
was
is where
thing.
I got
There's
confused.
Something about the envelope that they
either did she like
to
write
in?
A, yeah, did she like write a note on it or something?
Or maybe she wrote
we
a note
were
on
not
it.
Sure.
Oh, later on in the movie when he's in the cockpit, he reads a little note that she wrote when he's talking to her on the phone.
Oh, that's right. She put a note in there.
She put a note in there and later on in the movie it's so subtle and I totally missed it. Didn't realize it until this moment. Later on in the movie when they're in the fuselage, he's with Buck Williams, wherever his name is.
What's his name?
And they're flying the airplane and they're trying to land the plane and he gets a hold of his daughter and he looks down at the note and it says something like like, don't worry, Dad, we'll work it out.
Yeah,
or,
something
or,
like
or,
that.
Or, I
right,
still
you're
love
right,
you.
You're
or,
right, I forgot. There,
but
we
all make mistakes.
We weren't shown it in the movie.
There was something. There was something yeah. like, we really need to talk
I
when you get
that
back.
Was, like,
or
literally something about like the seats that he got that made him realize.
Well, because I could tell.
And then she said, and
I mean, like,
and then yes, because then the stewardess says, "What? What's wrong?" And he goes, "Nothing.
I thought there were better seats.
I thought there would be better seats." Like, it was dismissive, but seeing it in the scene, I was confused. Thought that the tickets got switched and he paid top dollar for wrong tickets, and it's going to tie into him being like this sleazy guy who bought tickets from a scalper.
Why is a basic storytelling move would you not put in an insert shot of what he's looking at and reacting to?
Exactly. Why make us work that hard to remember a really insignificant detail that just confused us the first time?
It just dawned on me right now.
I thought he was just like maybe like coming to like someone like, you know, boy, I've been terrible. I'm cheating on my wife. This is not a good thing to be doing. I thought he was just like having a momentary lapse of morality.
I kind of thought
you know?
That, but I'm like, why is the envelope making him feel that way? Because he wasn't looking at the tickets. He was looking at the envelope. I'm like, why would looking
later
at
on
a
the movie,
plane?
Like in the last act, there's
that's
a note.
Crazy.
He looks down at the note. And he says, I got to see my daughter again. And he looks down at the note.
So going back to the stewardesses earlier, remember, like, so earlier, so there's for one, this huge friggin' aircraft, two stewardesses on the entire flight.
Right.
Yeah. And there was one thing I actually didn't notice. Just because I don't pick up on these things. I saw a thing on IMDb. Someone had written a review. All it had to do was with the changing model of aircraft in the films. Like, like when you see, like the first time you see the plane, it's like an Airbus 360. The next time you see it, it's a 767. The next time, it's a 747. The next time, it's a 737. Like this person like named every single type of plane that the plane wound up becoming.
Yeah.
Wow.
But so it's the two stewardesses. And like the one is like, no, like I'm kind of, like, you know, oh, I'm banging the pilot, you know, sort of like that, like all happy. And the other one is like, oh, details, and like is all upset when she doesn't hear anything more.
Right.
And that's the one that, like, this weird pervy, skeevy, you know, just because she's got gold around her neck. She makes the cut.
Yeah,
because
she had Bible study in her planner too.
That's
so.
Right, a planner that has no dates on it.
Yep. Just Bible study anytime, Bible. Anywhere.
It's just a reminder.
Just
it literally,
concept.
I froze it because I wanted to read what the other things were. The other things were it was like a couple of items of groceries that she wanted pickup, dry cleaning, Bible study.
In general, floss. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, and so things get crazy.
Yeah,
both in the mall
freaking out.
And in the plane. People get. Crazy.
And they later establish somehow that it's happening all over the world.
Well, kind
there's
of.
Just a,
yet.
There's a
not
lot.
Not just yet. Not just
not
yet.
Just
but
yet.
It will later be established.
Yeah. So things
everyone
are crazy.
In the mall is panicking.
And the passengers start
now. Here's
screaming,
something
saying they want to see the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
To which point I'm like, what is he gonna do for you? Like why do you want to? Like, what is the guy who's literally just steering the plane? Like, what? How is that guy gonna? How is that the answer to your problems?
Mm-hmm.
You know, people in this movie.
Now, there's a weird thing too that kept bugging me is they kept cutting between the plane and New York.
We gotta cover this. We gotta
and
cover
I'm
this.
I'm not sure. Like, I know they're flying to London. They're over the ocean stuff, but. In the plane, it was always night.
It
like
was
stars out, dead of
night.
Yep.
Yes.
In New York, it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, it's midday.
It's
midday.
Yeah.
They might be like 4 hours ahead.
Because
they got to have enough gas to get all the way back to New York.
Yeah.
You said there were 3 hours out. That's the time
out.
You said.
They were
3 hours out. They're closer to London.
I don't know how many time zones the plane moving that fast could cover in 3 hours, but I'm pretty sure the time difference is not from noon to midnight.
Right.
No.
Later on in the movie, they're 20 minutes out of New York when they're trying to make it back, and it's still pitch black in the plane.
And it's sunset.
It's like 8 o'clock at night or like 7
York.
O'clock in
yeah,
New York.
Yeah, the sun is setting. Yeah.
Yeah, the consistency
that
on that
so
is,
much.
That bugs me too.
Yep. By the way, did anyone notice who was playing the co-pilot that you only saw for like a couple of seconds?
No.
Does anyone remember the old TV show from the early 90s called Herman's Head?
God, yes.
It was the lead of Herman's Head.
Yes.
Are you kidding me?
No. And he's in the original Fright Night, too, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my
yes.
God.
That's right.
I thought
he looked familiar, and I
that
couldn't, like, connect the... okay. And there's crazy looting going on in New York City. Did
everyone
immediately.
All the kids vanish quick. Punch this lady, take her stuff.
Yeah. Did you guys see the shot of the looting? The guy who's carrying a 32-inch TV on his shoulder.
Yep,
see that?
I saw that.
32-inch, like 32 is huge on the box.
I enjoyed that. But that whole thing, I mean, like, and the subsequent sequences of like her, of Chloe trying to get back home, like she is running down the street.
For some reason, she can't find her car and drive it. Is there any reason?
No, she found her car, then a plane crashed into it.
A plane crashed into her car.
Yeah, that's right.
A little one passenger.
Yeah, the ultralight plane. No, yeah, the ultralight plane crashed.
Which
there's so many random crashes that happen, too. Like a school bus almost kills her.
Well, I'll pay this movie one compliment and one compliment only. I thought the small plane crash was not handled terribly. I thought of the stunts in the movie.
I just thought it was that heads your list of compliments.
I just thought
the single plane crash was not bad.
I thought it was ridiculous that this plane falls out of the sky and crashes into her car specifically.
That was
the one car she wants to get into.
It's got to hit someone's car.
That was silly.
But the whole thing, I mean, like, and there's the scene later on. I mean, like, you know, as she's running back, she's running down the street, and all of a sudden, like, you know, this there's a shotgun explosion. A guy falls out for whatever reason. His face is all spray painted, like white and black drips.
Yeah.
And then the guy comes out. It's like a diamond store,
and he's like holding the gun on her.
He's holding
the
gun, and she goes along. Now, here's that scene. Everything
scene.
In the mall. This is another example of what I saw in this film of, like, you know, what the people that make these movies, or what they think the people that attend these movies think about the rest of the United States. That the second
everyone's packing heat,
like everyone's got a gun, everyone is murderous, and that, like, the second stuff goes wrong, that, like,
they even know
that
what's
if you're
going
not
on.
The kind of person that would get raptured up immediately, that this is who you are.
Right.
Yeah.
You are evil. You're scurrilous. You have no convictions whatsoever, and you will kill, murder, rape, anything.
Yeah. Basically turns into, like,
steal,
Escape from L.A. The whole
movie is Escape from L.A.
But clearly there are some characters who are not like that. Now, I was seeing...
And there's plenty of decent people left.
Right.
Yeah. You know, even the preacher.
Yeah.
Even the preacher, he was in this, right? And I'm just reminding you from the other one.
He was. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he had his crisis of faith. He didn't make it up. But all the same, I'm certain that he's a decent man. Look at what he's accomplished in his life.
But,
bringing other people to God, doing, you know, food drives, who knows
what. I'm making an assumption here. Of course, this film makes me and makes everyone make some huge assumptions. But I thought where they were going with this is maybe they were doing something like The Stand, where not going to heaven in the rapture isn't necessarily a bad thing, because maybe... there's a test, like God wants to test certain people to try to be good people. And maybe that, like, a Stand thing was going to happen where the two factions were going to split.
You know, it's interesting because I was kind of wondering, I wasn't thinking about The Stand necessarily, but I was kind of thinking about, like, you know, are they going to set this up as being like, this is sort of like, you know, take two on your life? Is this your opportunity
to change,
make things like, well, I watched the other one, the original Kirk Cameron. No, it is not your opportunity to make things right.
No,
okay. You're left behind. You are screwed. You're effed. That's it. You're done. The first movie makes it quite clear. And it's interesting, like, you know, if you watch the extra features that have the writer and the director and the producer, you know, they're all basically the guy that produces this movie is named something Lalonde, and everything he's ever done, you look him up on IMDb, the only credits he has are Christian based films. All right, and like, he made the original Left Behind, and he's made all these other different ones. And in this thing, it's interesting because you watch him basically tearing apart Christian films, and about the simplicity of characters, and how, like, you know, it's like the movies are made for people that are sitting and watching it together in a church basement. They're not for general audiences and trying to invite them in and pull them in and this and that. And he said, and I think that, like, this was his attempt by not naming something like that, leaving it possibly open, that maybe there's a chance for further redemption as his way of getting more people to come in and watch this and maybe watch the inevitable sequel that they were hoping was going to happen.
I would have been more interested in the movie, though, if it was like I want,
like,
it to
a
be
test
almost
faith.
Like apocalyptic thing where it's like everyone is ascended and then it's like now the world just goes to crap and, you know, just something more trying to survive.
This has a real neither here nor there kind of effect.
Because once they figure out what happened, they kind of figure it out little by little. But once they do, it's like it has nothing to do with the rest of the movie. It's like the rest of the movie is like, we have to land this plane.
Right.
And then
it's
the
just
movie.
Like, how does this
Which
plane
because,
get
I mean, like, yeah. because if there is no point, like, you know, they're sort of hinging on you not knowing whether is there an opportunity for further redemption, because otherwise, why should I care about this plane
lane? Right.
There's no one ever is dealing with that. Like, why was I left behind, or is there some way to...
For a whole movie that's supposed to be about thinking about your life, no one gets to do any thinking.
I know.
Right.
I know.
All right, we're...
And then, so I've got... at this point,
so it's the, I mean, this section.
So
of the
Chloe's running around.
Yeah, basically. Chloe's running around yelling her brother's
name. And meantime, Nicolas Cage is trying to calm down the passengers.
He leaves a flight attendant in charge. We get a couple of bad edits. He has no co-pilot. Yeah. He just puts a flight attendant in the cockpit and it's like, hey, you're in charge. I'm gonna go walk around the cabin.
Yeah, there's, like, yeah, there's no way in hell he would leave the deck. Are you kidding me?
Like, what?
There's one.
Like the other pilot is missing.
You'll
just abandon the front.
Yeah.
There's one edit in this movie that bugged me so much I have to bring it up. It was such a failure of editing where Buck Williams gets his camera out and he starts like shooting people on the plane like he's trying to cover the story.
Yep.
And at one point he's like shooting in the not the first class section but the whatever you call it.
Coach section.
He's trying to talk to some woman and this guy walks up. And this guy like walks right into his camera, like bumps into his camera, and they cut to the other shot of him standing there shooting, and the guy's just disappeared. He's not there. The guy who like walked into him.
It was such a bad edit. They used it as a natural wipe, and then forgot to put him back in the next shot.
But leading up to it, also as he approaches the woman, the clothes and backpack of her son are on the seat to her right, and then from Buck Williams' camera's perspective. But then when he approaches her in the cinematographer's camera, it's on her left.
Yeah.
So not only is there a bad edit, but there's also a jump in. There's also a jump across. Yes, a jump across the axis in the same scene.
Yeah. It was just like another failure of this film.
Yeah.
Everything's starting to fall apart in the plane, and now this is where like all the different, like here's the character tropes we've provided.
Yeah.
Everyone interact, and all of a sudden everyone fulfills their role.
Yep.
You got the drug addict who's struggling, she's shooting up in the bathroom. She's shooting up in the bathroom.
It's just a bad trip. Again,
this movie is a bad trip.
What people think junkies say.
The angry dwarf who's angry at the world
because he's short.
Who suddenly is a theologian.
Yeah, he's suddenly
very concerned about whether we're talking about the Muslim God or my God. Yes.
Exactly.
Right. Like your God?
We have the rich guy who was never around for his parent, for his family because he's greedy.
And you can kind of see with everyone they're building, like they have like an instant like sin where you're like, okay, this is this person's sin.
But the Muslim guy has
like,
no sin.
This is where I start to get trouble because I'm like, this.
He has no sin.
He is.
In fact, he says maybe we should pray.
Yeah.
Right.
And he seems to be a great person, and this movie is essentially saying, hey, sorry if you're Muslim, you can be a great person, but tough. You know.
The guy that plays the Muslim is a Christian actor.
Okay. Really?
Yes, and the Muslim's character's name is Hasid.
Okay.
And when you talk, he's like, I'm watching like the different. I'm like, who the heck? What name is this guy? And I'm hitting this guy, and he's like blonde with like you know no facial hair whatsoever. And he says like you know and you know playing playing this character really really challenged me in my faith. And I'm like, how to think that like someone that's really decent like by your.
Wait, how did it challenge you to say, hey, maybe this other religion has some validity?
Yeah. I mean,
that was... That
or at
really,
the very least, that like they're not straight out evil just because that's
how
the faith
a Muslim
in which they were raised.
Be in it?
That
really, like, it was really, it really challenged my faith. I'm like, well, I hope it did, pal.
It really bothered me in the way they handled it because they're working so hard to not be offensive, to have the Muslim character be a really decent person and like, you know, kind of a leader and also kind of understanding. But... that's the kind of micro look at it. In a macro look at his character, it's like, nope, yay, not Christian.
Yep.
You know, no good. Yep. Like,
there's another thing I didn't get when we do the scene with the preacher, when Chloe encounters her family preacher and he's crying and he says, I don't know why I haven't gone. And he says, well, I've struggled with my faith and there are times when I've questioned my belief. And then later on when she goes to the hospital and the babies are gone, the babies are too young to have believed. So
well,
it's not
that's,
belief.
Well, that's the kind of
now,
thing
they're without sin
like,
because they're
where,
little babies.
I'm
I get
wondering,
it,
like,
but,
you know, where on the bell curve, because it's like, you know, all right, well, those aren't baptized babies.
Nah, I thought that too.
You know, I'm like, you know, well,
or
what about the
Muslim
baby.
Babies?
Yeah. Right.
You know, exactly. Like, you know.
Well, I think it's almost saying,
I mean,
like.
This can't answer for everything, obviously, but, like, you know, I kind of, like, want to see the expanded version where, like, they. All right, well, tell me what you think happened.
Yeah. If you're old enough to make a choice other than Christianity, left behind.
They hit that age of reason.
And what about that little brat who's totally like hitting cats with a BB gun and like acting up in class? You know, he's a kid, so he gets to go up, you know?
Yeah.
Like say some 12-year-old kid who like beats the crap out of other kids all the time because he's a bully.
Yeah.
You know?
Wouldn't that be something though? If
that would
like,
be
you
pretty,
know,
that would
if,
be
like,
a pretty
like,
asshole
in a world,
thing
like,
for
like all
God
the
to
kids have
movie,
left,
but...
like in the movie, like all of a sudden, like they take like 18 seconds out to like for Chloe to notice like some really badass 10-year-old kid walking down the middle of the street with like a baseball bat with nails on it and a chain,
like the Mad Max kid.
Exactly. You know, like the one that's got that weird like mannequin head with the feathers sticking out of it.
I think that would have been an interesting thing now because say a child was left behind and now you're thinking, well, now the movie would be a little bit more intelligent, right? Because one side says, well, if you believe in God, you go to heaven. And the other side says, well, what has this kid done that's truly evil that would allow him to get left behind? And that would have made a more interesting story to me of then why are some of these people who might be good, why are they left behind?
Mm-hmm.
A child, a Muslim... You know, well, he's not going to heaven because he's not a Christian. But does God still think he has value?
And that's the thing is, like, you know, the movie
you're needed in
the
this
movie
world,
provides
you know?
No explanation. Yeah, that's whatsoever. What I was and I think that that's their desire to not irritate or cheese off a non-Christian audience. And they don't want to judge anyone that could be watching the film. Yeah.
Which
I was just hoping that they would
it
go
it
into some
them,
explanation of something because they just kind of figure out like, oh, this
know?
Is
yeah. in filmmaking.
Yeah, this is the you know the rapture or whatever, and it's like, okay, forget about it now. We're done talking about that.
Yeah, yeah, just accept it. Moving yeah. on. Yeah.
At some point though, Chloe goes to she finally gets home.
This yeah. scene, yeah.
And she's walking through her house and she's like calling her mom's name and she hears a shower running. So she goes to the shower and opens it, and her mother's like jewelry is laying like on the drain. So yeah. she's disappeared. No. Now Jack and I were talking. And we're like, this would have been more interesting if like yep. the mother was like, this thing happened. I didn't
like in the shower. Well, like, in the shower,
this
crying.
Was, this
is what
was
I expected.
The
yeah.
only point where they actually kind of paced or edited it well because they know that that's the question on your mind:
is she
there?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I thought it'd been interesting if she was there.
Yeah.
And then she's
yeah.
dealing with that for the rest of the movie. But no, she's gone.
But you know what? I was thinking that too. Like, well, what if she's not going to be there? Like, there's no way that this movie can have her be there.
Yeah,
because
sure. It ruins the logic of their story.
It, absolutely. Yeah. It ruins the internal logic of the film if yeah. she's not...
Right.
Yeah. Didn't go up.
Yes. Yeah.
So, so
I also,
then,
before...
It would be just, great, though, if other than just, like, the necklace, if, like, her IUD... like, anything else was still there.
Before you go, I also got a kick out of... The emotional tone of what's going on in the plane shifts very dramatically as you cut from like New York to the plane. Mm-hmm. In one scene, it can be total chaos on the plane. And it, like we go to New York, cut back to the plane, and most of the passengers literally look bored.
Yep.
Like people are like looking at the ceiling and you know, just like looking at their shoes. And you're like, wow, things have really calmed down.
There's a shot in the film, whether it's intentional or not, I have to assume that it's intentional. But where there's a woman in the back, a woman and a guy. I don't know if they're a couple, but they're there. But there's a scene where the stewardess is trying to calm down another passenger, and the lady that's way in the back is just like her head's back, her mouth's open, like she's like completely asleep. By the way, I have to bring something up.
Okay.
When I was watching this movie, I didn't watch it all in one go. I watched about an hour, and then I watched the last half hour yesterday. My mother-in-law lives with my wife and I. She has Alzheimer's. And she came in and started watching the movie about 5 minutes in.
Mm-hmm.
Every 5 minutes or more, or less, I mean to say, she would stop and say, what are we watching?
Yeah.
Like, because she would forget. So like, you know, like, if like she has Alzheimer's, so it's like, if every 5 minutes, like, she stops with incredulity to say, what is this crap? Which is what she was doing.
Yeah.
You've made a pretty bad film.
Yeah, I mean, it's remarkable because this is a 2% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Mm.
That is hard to do. Yeah.
And you know one of that 2% is ironic.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, like it's.
Well, I think you're gonna have like built in Christian hater trolls are gonna be like, this movie's Christian, so it sucks. And then you're gonna have that. But then again, that built in market of Christians who say they love it because it's Christian didn't help either.
I didn't go on Rotten Tomatoes. I never really actually visited their site. I go to IMDb mostly, but a lot of the reviews on there are from Christians.
Really?
They say, like,
and they don't
like this movie. It's insulting to my faith. It's insulting
to
the series. It's insulting to whatever. It's like, it's horrible. Like, it doesn't matter if it pays heat. It's a boring, sloppy, crappy. Yeah, like, they hated it.
There you
it.
Go. Yeah. So both sides
they
don't like
hated it.
It
doesn't really say anything about religion. I mean, you kind of forget it's even a religious movie partway through. When they're just trying to land
the
plane.
The whole thing becomes, like, once it gets to the point where Leah's mom is gone, there's nothing more with spirituality almost whatsoever.
Yeah.
Almost whatsoever. It's all about get the plane down.
Yeah. So Chloe goes at this point when she realizes her mom is gone. She's just like, okay, she just decides to kill herself, I guess. She's trying to call her father on the plane. She can't get through.
I will say some of the shots leading up to her climbing up on that bridge were actually like really nice shots. Like I thought they looked really nice. I guess I'm gonna throw a random compliment.
I mean, they had some money, and it was like like a sort of like a dusk shot, pink background. But you know, it's gonna look good.
Yeah.
You know, as long as you have a good enough camera.
Right.
But it's actually kind of interesting. Like in that shot, that long shot, then all of a sudden they cut, and like it's like further on in there. Uh-huh. Yeah. You can tell it's like the helicopter got too close, and she couldn't handle it.
Now I think that was really her up there.
It was.
Like they did passes on purpose to show her face. No, I appreciate that.
In the extras, they talk about how they had her. She free climbed it. Like they literally didn't like bring her up there on a helicopter. She had to climb 400 feet the way to get up there and get latched on.
Yep.
So one thing we didn't mention, we should mention too, is at one point in the movie, a plane with no pilot is coming. Is on like a
There's
like one plane left over the Atlantic.
Yes, and it's about to collide right into Nick Cage's plane.
Yeah,
which it wouldn't have, but Nick Cage steers right into it.
Flies right into
it. Move on of my way. I'm not moving.
I'm climbing 2,000 feet. Wham! Right into it. If you stayed where you were, you'd have been fine. Yeah. If you had gone to the left or the right for just a couple of seconds, you'd have been fine. Right.
Yeah.
But you flew right into it.
Yep.
Right into it.
So he like clips the tail of it or whatever, and the plane goes down. But for like as he's doing this, he happened to be like on the phone trying to call his daughter.
He's got a sat phone.
What? So he like
the guy did.
So he leaves.
He had his own cell phone. You're gonna get bars.
So he like accidentally leaves like a voicemail of them hitting the other plane, which the daughter hears.
How did that happen?
I didn't understand that either.
So she assumes that he's dead. Because it sounds like he died. Because, so that's why she's going to kill
herself. Because, of course, when cell phones cut out, they leave 3 seconds of a burst of static.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So she's on top of the bridge, and she's about, like, literally about to jump. She's, like, right about to go over, and, like, her cell phone rings or something, doesn't it?
Well, it does. Yeah.
And so she, like, stops. She's like, oh, I better answer this call. And it's her dad.
Well, before we get too far in, there's a couple of things that happen on the plane before we get to that kind of waypoint I want to talk about. One of them being, how did Jordan Sparks have a gun?
She got the air marshal's gun. The whole thing was supposed to make you think that either the midget or the Muslim took it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so
and by the way, what midget comic relief throughout this movie.
I know.
Boy, I got to tell you, I love the fact that the actor who's been working doing a lot of stuff has brought it forth again that midgets are there to laugh at.
Well, it is.
I did. I laughed pretty hard.
People who should be the most offended at this, I would say, like little people may have the right to the most offended title by
shaking
this.
Shaking his head right now.
Criminals and cowards, all of them.
It made me laugh really hard when the Muslim kicks him off the plane later on, like onto the slide,
what?
And he goes.
Oh my God! Goes him the in the ass.
Literally, they did dwarf tossing. I was like, what?
It goes the shot. I'm just like going face first in the like that made me laugh.
That was so unnecessary. I mean, that was just a pure cheap shot.
That's why
it really was.
So
it really
nothing
was.
But that.
But yeah, so Jordan Sparks, I'm sorry, Shasta Carvel freaks out. She's got the gun. And I don't even really remember how she gets talked down by the stewardess.
I just have written down at
it's
one
Brock
point.
Brock Williams or whatever.
Well, she's like pointing the gun at people, Hattie. like telling you know, be
she's,
like,
she's
tell me
freaking
where my
out.
Kid is.
She thinks that her billionaire football player husband somehow worked out a scenario where they landed the plane.
They
when
landed
she was
the plane like gassed her so like she couldn't wake up.
Stole her
the kid,
child, and
now everyone's in on the. Yeah, oh my
and she
God.
Has a great line where she's pointing the gun at people and she goes, "He already thinks I'm crazy. What am I supposed to say?" And I'm like. Says the woman pointing a gun at people on a plane.
Now, this was a really good scene because the moment she pulls the gun out, right, isn't this where they cut to the gunshot scene with the shotgun out of the diner?
Yeah.
I thought that was actually
pretty effective. No, that was when the Muslim was pulling his electric toothbrush out of his bag.
Okay.
Yeah,
I thought that was, I will say that was good editing. That was an effective sequence.
And there's one other funny line where the woman who's on drugs, this is as they're starting to figure out what's going on, and the woman on drugs is like, oh, my parents sent me to camp one summer and everyone was talking about this.
Yeah.
And they're like, whoa, what's going to happen? They said, millions of people would disappear. And like Buck Williams is like, what else did they say? Nah, I don't remember. Like, what was that? What the hell was that?
Oh my God.
Everyone that's where I thought you were gonna
get.
About it.
That's where I thought you were gonna get a little more of the exposition of it, but that was
yeah,
like,
nope, just enough.
Yeah, just enough.
That's all you needed. Yeah,
they do mention Syracuse here somewhere.
Syracuse is impossible.
Yeah, yeah. Do I get the closest open runway?
LaGuardia's backed up. We got problems all over JFK. You're gonna have to go to Syracuse. Syracuse is too far out.
Yeah, because it was funny when they were saying that, like, oh, JFK's filled, LaGuardia's filled. I was like, oh, what about Hancock? And then they say, like, oh, you're gonna have to try to.
That's only like 40 more minutes in airplane time.
This is also like a very, as Tim said, like a Toronto, very Midwestern view of like the East Coast. It's like, okay, you've got Newark, you've got Philly, right. You've got Teterboro, you've got Toronto, I mean,
if you really want to risk it.
Long Island, there's endless airports like either, on the eastern seaboard.
Either New York or Syracuse.
Yeah, well, JFK's down, all right, that's it. You know, I don't know, there's
Syracuse
one other
or Toronto.
One. Yeah, I mean, made no sense.
Nope.
Okay, so you're right. So the phone, but this we could do a whole podcast on how phone technology works.
Yeah, I love how he's like, do you have a satellite phone? I'm an investigative reporter. And he pulls out what's like an iPhone. Yeah. It's like there's a satellite phone app that you can download for your phone.
Yeah.
So, she gets a phone call and then she's like, oh, I thought you were dead. And he's like, no, honey, I need help landing this plane because we don't have any fuel left.
So
she has to find me a place to land.
She uses the classic movie cliche of the big truck with the keys left in it.
Yep. Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Like, you know, she gets this phone call when she's on top of the bridge.
Yeah.
So she's got to climb 400 feet down the bridge, run the length of the bridge.
Okay.
This chick runs for miles in like 2 minutes.
Well, I laughed like really hard here because for the next like 10 minutes of this movie, it's just shots of her just changing vehicles.
Yep.
Yes. She picks up a motorcycle. She drives a motorcycle to somewhere. And then she gets in a truck. She drives a truck. Then she gets in a steamroller.
Why aren't you just finishing the ride on one of these things?
Yeah.
And I really did think, if she got in the steamroller, I'm like, what's she going to accomplish on the steamroller?
I laughed so hard when she got in the steamroller. She's like, it's going too slow. I'm like, yeah, it's a steamroller.
Yeah, it's a steamroller. Bigger wheels doesn't mean faster.
Well, here's the funniest part. So she has the idea to clear this kind of highway that's under construction. She's clearing, like, orange cones and porta potties. I've known. I'm like, that is the least of
your worries.
Problems. Like it is
vehicles in the way.
Like it can handle a few orange cones. You know.
Oh my
like,
god. But the whole thing of it is that, in like earlier in the film, when like she's in that car going to the mall and it takes a left and you see that sign. And it, what did it say? Like road closed ahead or something like that. Yeah. And it sat on it. And sat on it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Sarah's like, why is that up for so long? And I said, like, I guess it's just symbolism. I'm not getting.
Road to heaven is closed.
Exactly. You know, I'm like, I think it had to have just been that.
But no, there's an old road that's closed. You can land on
that. This was so that the audience could go at the same time, aha, that closed road. You should go there.
There's a shot where she's like stealing the motorcycle and there's a bridge above her and you can see just like tractor trailers driving by and cars like
ordinary commerce
just going on like the world just keeps turning.
And I kind of had an issue with this movie too in the sense of like why it was so fixated on this had to be New York because I don't know if they view like New York as very hedonistic or I don't know because it's painfully
obvious.
Could have
taken place anywhere.
Did you see where it was shot?
I did, and I'm like, because I'm like, as I'm looking at it, I'm like,
oh, wait, is this a Vancouver movie?
It didn't feel like New York.
Baton Rouge. Old Red Stick, Louisiana.
Yeah.
They shot this in Louisiana?
Yeah, man. Because it looks nothing
like New York.
I honestly
didn't realize it was supposed to be New York until the end.
I figured usually when you see a movie that's supposed to take place in New York, usually second unit does New York, and then they'll shoot somewhere like Toronto or Vancouver to save money.
Yeah, but no, this is...
It said at the end, shot entirely in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Then why not have it take place in Baton Rouge,
Louisiana? I don't know. Or at least even like a southern city, if you'd even said
like Atlanta
to me, like,
or
this
something.
Was Atlanta or something, I would have been like, oh, okay, I'd buy that. It looked more like Atlanta than it looked like New York.
I guess they're just getting breakdancing malls in Baton Rouge.
They're just there. And the biggest laugh, I got to point
15
out.
15 years behind Canada.
They're still slow. The best laugh in this movie. When Buck Williams and Rayford call in and they're like, we need a visual indicator for how to land on this makeshift runway. And the girl goes, I'm flashing my high beams on the truck.
Oh my god.
Nicolas Cage character's face made the whole movie worth it for me. It's a look on his face. He's like, oh my god, my kid's an idiot.
I just love, the thing I love it too is like, where are you? He's like, you know, all right, open the Compass app on your phone.
Yeah,
like, read us the numbers. And he's like, all right, well, that's great. You know where she is. What bearing are you coming in on? And he's like, all right, well, just get there. That's fine. Because obviously that is the start of the runway, no matter which direction I'm coming from.
Yeah, because when she finally does start a huge fire to mark it, they're way off. He has to make a pretty like bold turn to like get over there.
And by the way, I mean, like, you know, the scale of that city changes quite devastatingly. I mean, like, from like the size of the explosion that you saw on screen versus what it looked like from the sky. Oh my god.
Yeah. And the fact that they can look at it and be like, there it is.
Oh, there's shots of her too later on running away from the explosions, like slow motion, like some epic action movie. And it's like,
Michael Bay directed it.
Because something else blows up, right?
Well, the plane lands.
But then there's a chain reaction. Like, crash, she's supposed to have screwed up. Like some of the barrels are too close together or something.
Okay.
And now the plane is at risk of blowing up.
Okay.
And then at the very end, it slides to within 3 feet of the tanker truck filled with fuel.
And it never blows up.
But what's the other thing that blows up?
There's like another,
I don't know,
like
Cage's career.
Just a shot. Okay. There's just one. I think it may just be a throwaway shot. Like she's running towards the plane. And
it was like extra fire
like
from something.
She's running.
Yeah, because I was like,
for no reason.
It was just another barrel or something. It was just to look cool.
Yeah, it just
must have been
cool.
Just to look cool. Okay.
Yeah. So now they're going to try to land. They're landing the plane. She has, they really treat this character like she's so dumb, because she's now, like, hit something with the truck, and the truck is stuck, like, in the dirt, but plane is landing.
I still never figured out how that happened.
I don't know how that happened. I just have a note here. I'm like, get out of the truck, stupid, and, like, she just decides to sit in the truck and watch a plane. It comes so close to hitting her. She's on the phone, be like, pull up the wing. I can't get out of this truck with a door. It's easier for you to pull up an airplane's wing than for me to get out of this truck. So crazy.
I forgot about that. They had just had to gild the lily. Wasn't action-packed enough.
I guess so.
Not enough at risk.
I guess. And that shot, the moment where the plane actually comes like through the fire and then is touching down, something is very wrong with that effect shot.
Well, for one, it's like the placement of the fire and like how high it's going up versus like where you see it from the interior shot looking out of from the cockpit.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the plane would have like been coming in at its regular approach, like drop 30 feet and then just like plop.
And then
just like roll forward.
It almost feels like it, like, because it seems to be like almost stopped at the moment it touches on the ground. Like it had like a VTOL, like vertical takeoff and landing. Yeah. But then it seems to pick up speed again moments later. This was insane.
Was badly done.
Physics of this aircraft are just mind-boggling.
So the plane, as we said, it just makes it.
Thank God.
I think that it goes for a comic relief moment when the seatbelt light goes off. You know, just kind of like a wink, wink.
And then
like, who turned it off? Who took the time to turn that off?
Nick Cage is like, you know what? Everyone appreciates a little levity. I'm going to turn off the seatbelt light.
I almost think the crazy landing at the beginning of Sharknado 2 was better handled than this.
And then, so the flight attendant is helping everybody off. As we mentioned, we get this crazy scene where the little person is thrown off the plane by a Muslim.
Yeah.
And they're
all holding hands.
By the way, if in the
next Left Behind film, they're not like this cop duo. Everything's wrong with the world.
I really thought that was going to be where this was going, that the two of them were going to settle their differences.
Be friends.
No, they never do. They settle no differences. And Nick Cage goes through the plane. Did anyone else notice this? So, like, everybody else gets off the plane. Mm-hmm. The flight attendant goes on.
I think
and
it's
Nick
just
Cage,
making sure everybody's okay.
Yeah.
But it kind of goes nowhere. Like, it's a shot sequence. Like, I kind
of feel
like
there's. It gives the impression that something is about to happen. Like, there's someone hiding.
It's building to something. And then it's like, nope, plane is empty. Okay, Nick Cage just gets off. I'm like, well, that was really
not worth it. Just because a pilot would have done that doesn't mean it needs to be in your film.
You needed to show it,
He's trying to find out who turned off that seatbelt light.
Where's that baby it's missing?
Are any of them drugs still in the bathroom? And then someone's like, oh, this is
gotta
the
get
end.
Those U2 tickets.
Where are those U2 tickets? That show might still go on. Someone's like, oh, it's like the end of the world. And someone's like, no, it's just the beginning. Get it?
Yep. Sequel setup.
Yeah. Well, the thing that I liked about it was that, like, you know, like they did that stereotypical shot where you think they're going to be like looking at the new dawn, when in fact and it's just like the barn, it's Manhattan on fire.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
With like really old, like Die Hard, there's a building on fire.
Yeah.
Effects in the background. Yeah, where it's like an old process shot.
Yeah. And I kind of, I have two so wrong it's right questions. Mm-hmm. My first one I want to do is, do you guys know Vic Armstrong, who directed this? You guys, I'm Jack and Cody, guy, I'm guessing you guys
know. Yeah, I looked him up.
James Bond.
Okay.
Stuff. Yeah, he does a lot of stunt work.
He's famous for, I mean, he did a lot of the James Bond stuff. He was
Jones,
Harrison
Ford.
Indiana Jones.
Yeah, like when you see the, some of the stunts, like the famous Raiders of the Lost Ark, like under the truck, you know, that's bit him. And all of that, that's him. That's Vic Armstrong. Okay. Like one of the greatest stuntmen in the business. So, okay, well, I'll just give away my other, my first so wrong it's right question because I like this other one better. Do you know that Lolo Jones plays like the woman at the desk? As they're getting onto the plane, like the ticket counter.
No, I didn't get that.
Lolo Jones. How do
the,
I know
the
who's
Olympian?
Lolo Jones?
She's a sprinter. She's that kind.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Yeah,
she's known like, for being a virgin.
Yeah, she's like such a weird little.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, I was like, I didn't even notice that. And okay,
cameo, random cameo. Okay.
All right. So here is. I don't know if it's going to happen now. We're hoping to do sequels to continue the storyline, as you know, Tim was saying. And the producer had said that three actors from this movie are under contract for sequels.
Really?
Not Nicolas Cage.
I imagine he could not have.
Not Nicolas Cage. Obviously, Chad Michael Murray, the Buck Williams and Chloe Steele.
Because the Buck Williams character is the main character of the Left Behind books.
He's the main character. So Buck and Chloe, who is the third actor who the producers say was put under contract for a sequel?
I'm going to say Jordan Sparks.
Okay. Goes going Jordan Sparks.
I hope it's the Muslim.
Okay. The Muslim actor.
I'm going to say, and I don't know his name, I'm going to say the little guy.
Oh, okay. Okay. The hot blonde flight attendant.
You're kidding. Oh, I should have known that because I watched the movie today.
Yeah, the hot blonde flight attendant.
I got to tell you, is she important? Holy cow. In the first Left Behind movie, so in the movie, Buck Williams is played by Kirk Cameron, all right? And to get into this really quick, he gets on the plane. He flies this airline so much he knows every single stewardess. He's sitting there typing away. It's the middle of the night. It's like, you know, red-eye flight, whatever like that. And the stewardess comes over and it's like, you know, hey, if you wake anybody up, you're going to help me serve the coffee. Oh, hey, how you doing? Hattie? How you doing, Hattie? Oh, good to see you, blah, blah, blah. By the way, thanks for putting that word in for me. I got the job. Oh, that's fantastic. You're going to do great. Guess what job she gets? She goes from being a stewardess to direct assistant to the head of the UN. Like a scene later on in the movie when Kirk Cameron tries to rush into the UN
because she knows
he gets stopped by security. Yeah, and that was it because so like you said, it's like you know, what's the name of the character? It's a Russian type name, like Leonid Carpathia.
Okay,
all right, is the name of, like the guy that runs the UN now. And Kirk Cameron's rushing up the steps, and the security guy stops him. It's like, you know, you go to the, not like stop him, like he's just like going down a different hallway. Like the media room's over there. I need to go see whatever the other guy name is. No, come with me. And like all of a sudden the stewardess comes out. You can leave him with me. I have orders. Like, you know, I speak directly for Mr. Carpathia. It's like it's been like 4 days.
Yeah.
Like, she hasn't even gone through, like, sexual harassment training yet. she's already, like, you know, every security guy knows her and that she speaks. And, like, and she got the job, basically. Like, you said, like, you know.
Wow.
Said like, you know, wow. It's good to see her here. She's like, yes. Well, I'm like, you know, Carpathia loves your reputation as an investigative reporter. It's why he gave me the job.
Oh my God.
Wow. Whoa. Oh, like your word meant a lot for him.
Wow.
Good grief.
Seriously. I should have known that. Of course it was her.
That blew me away though, because I'm like, oh, that character seemed like, in this movie, seems like a throwaway character.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
Good grief. And I do have a review I want to read. This is a review that I think I saw this on, this is off of Wikipedia, but all right, the review is, quote, "Most Christians in the world of this movie are portrayed as insistent, crazy, delusional, or at the very least, just really annoying. We tried to give the film 0 stars, but our paper's tech system wouldn't allow it. A review? from Christianity Today.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So wow. This is a lot of other people.
I think I was reading that the writer of the book series, or if there's two, I can't remember. But
yeah, they're co-authored.
They said that they felt like this was the best movie they'd ever seen based on The Rapture. Is what they said.
Yeah.
They're very, very.
Well, it's certainly the best looking.
Yeah. Oh, it looks very sharp. I mean, yeah. I don't know.
Here's the thing, though. Like, if you watch the extras, other than like the one or two actors that are hired and have some sort of reputation in the Christian world, I guess. Every single one, you can tell that the interviewer is prompting them to say questions about their faith, or how maybe their faith was built up from being in the film, or how they how they were changed from being. You could tell just from the way that they're starting their response that this is how they're being prompted. Every single one of them. The woman that plays the daughter, Chloe, she keeps talking about this. I've always wanted to do an action film, and Vic Armstrong's a legend in the business, and I couldn't wait to do anything. I'm like, well, yeah, really, you got hired 2 days before shooting started, which like she admits in the thing. I hired 2 days. I got my first day of shooting was on my birthday, and the thing of it too is that Nick Cage in the extras, he shows up, he's wearing like a white T-shirt, a red long sleeve shirt over that. That's not buttoned up. And he's very overtly wearing two sets of Hindu prayer beads around his neck to like really give the cue, like, I'm in this for the paycheck. Don't pin any of this film on me.
Wait, and it's interesting. I read some more of that Christianity Today review too, and they really say to churches they're marketing this film. They want churches to like organize like group screenings. They want like people to buy like ticket packages. You know, it's different. They're like, don't do it. This is, you know, just not the portrayal of Christianity that we really, you know,
because you kind of think that they'd be happy for any exposure, even something like this that's kind of flawed from their perspective, to at least get people talking.
Well, I can see their point though, and like it really is such a grating portrayal of Christianity, and it's such a it doesn't portray it. I don't think I don't think it's a very fair portrayal really of any religion.
No,
whatever I would say it's whatever religion it was centered on. I would say like, oh, that is not a flattering portrayal of that religion.
It's actually kind of interesting.
Like I'm better than you because I read the Bible. Bye bye. I'm going to heaven now. Screw you. It's kind of like
Actually kind of interesting. If you thought like if someone sat you down and watched this movie, and then asked you afterwards, now let me ask you. Do you think this was written by a Christian or an atheist? You'd be hard pressed. You'd be thinking about it.
I agree. Yeah. Such a weird one. And just so terribly put together.
Let me just defend Nicolas Cage. Obviously, the man just needed some money.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was so waiting this whole movie for just a freak out. I just wanted one freak out from him.
I don't think here's the thing of it. Nicholas, I think a lot of people misunderstand Nicolas Cage, and I'm certain I don't understand it completely, obviously. But I think he elevates just about everything that he's in. If it's good, he makes it better. If it's crap, he makes it at least watchable.
He does.
And think about, like, I was thinking about this on the way over here. Like, who else could have been in this film? If it wasn't him, think about the actors that would likely have been in it. And you know what the first person that came to mind was? I don't remember the name of the actor, but the guy from Parks and Rec that was in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Chris Pratt.
Couldn't you see, like, if he hadn't gotten that gig, if he hadn't gotten Guardians of the Galaxy, couldn't you see him in this movie? Just because he's good looking, you can kind of buy him as a pilot, you can kind of buy him as like a philandering dad, and kind of think, well, what would that movie have been like? And then you think about other actors, you think, well, what would that movie have been like? And it would have been awful. But Nicolas Cage, and believe me, it was.
Yeah.
But Nicolas Cage actually brings some class to it. Everyone else is freaking out. He's like the one guy that's kind of centered and trying to bring things under control. He's acting kind of calm the way, like, I think that, like, a relatively with it pilot would behave in this situation.
Sure. And that's the funny thing is, like, you're right. Because in this, you can see that Nicolas Cage can act when he wants to. Mm-hmm. And he is kind of giving a nuanced performance
in a way he is.
Yeah, I mean, he is the least of this film's problems. and probably you're right. One of its strengths is that I'm sure he's doing it just for the money, but he was probably like, I'm gonna try to save this bastards. Something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this was this was a tough one. All right, we'll wrap this one up quick. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at WindUpFilms.
Yes.
You can follow us on Facebook. I do not know what our pictures are going to be of for this breakdancing.
I really don't know.
Batman and Robin was like rife with like potential screen grabs. This visuals. Is like, you know, not as much.
Maybe audio clips of the music changes.
Well, if you're going to have one screen grab from this, it's got to be the dwarf getting his ass kicked off the plane.
Maybe. Because
that's what this whole movie like feels like.
Yeah.
With all of us, we are all that little person. Yeah.
Inside.
And
I'm three or four.
And we can do, to pitch our older episodes, if you want to hear some of Tim's other episodes that he's on with us for, Jaws 4, mm-hmm.
I just listened to the Mortal Instruments one.
Mortal Instruments, and then The Last Airbender.
Oh, The Last Airbender. Yes. Yeah, those are all available at.
Those are classic episodes.
Those are great episodes. Those are all at www.stopthemoviepodcast.podbean.com.
Mm-hmm.
Free downloads there. iTunes only keeps the last 20 or so episodes. And I'll make this pitch. I haven't made it in a while. If you like the show, please give us a positive review on iTunes. Take a second to do it. It somehow helps in Apple's algorithms and helps us out. So it's a huge boost for us if you can. And Tim, we will have you back again soon for another crazy movie.
It's like the end of the James Bond movie. Tim Ferlito will return.
Yeah.
In Breaking 2.
And otherwise, we will be back soon. I can't preview any movies this week. Tim, I previewed Dune, and then Dune was so terrible that we had to tell people we couldn't do it. But we'll be back with
That's
something
too bad.
I'm a Dune apologist. Oh, God. We can talk about it off mic, of it that I sat through. anybody? Oh, we didn't even do a quick round of Is It So Bad It's Good?
No.
I'm going to say no.
No. Okay. However, I did laugh out loud quite a bit.
I laughed at a lot of two moments during it, but overall, no. Okay. Wow, that's our biggest wrap-up ever.
The school bus was crushing her with my laugh. Oh, that wasn't me. Actually, you have that school bus that just,
I forgot.
Laterally fell off a bridge.
For some reason, that made me laugh out loud.
How did the school bus get into a position to fall off of that bridge?
It was like a 20-second slow-motion shot of it. They really wanted to get the most out of destroying the school bus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Somebody paid $100,000 for that bus, and we're getting a lot of footage of it. Yeah. All right, we will see you back here next time. All right, bye.
Bye. Bye.